special shout-out to one of my listeners, Ray in Chicago, Illinois. Thanks for listening. Keep telling me your feedback, comments, and suggestions. Look forward to hearing from everyone else's suggestions. Let's get right into things. Welcome to another Economic Week in Review for the week of July 17th through the 21st. My name is Jonathan Andrew Walter. I'm your guide. I'm going to take you through the economic reports that happened last week and how they're important to investors. Send me feedback to talk@econtechblog.com. Okay, the release of some separate and generally benign reports came out last week on prices at the consumer as well as the wholesale levels. This marked the week's most closely watched economic news. Other reports came out, though. They were mixed. Industrial output rose sharply. A survey of leading economic indicators rose slightly. And housing starts tumbled. For the week, the S&P 500 index rose 0.4% to 1,240, and the yield of the 10-year U.S. Treasury note fell 1 basis point to 5.05%. The PPI, or the Producer Price Index, a measure of inflation at the production level, rose 0.5% in June. This exceeded analysts' expectations. The gain was mostly due to higher prices from food and energy. But if you just look at the core PPI, which excludes these volatile categories of food and energy, it only rose 0.2%, and this is what analysts expected. Inflationary pressures remained high in the early stages of production, though manufacturers had yet to pass on their rising materials and energy costs to consumers in the prices of finished goods. Over the past 12 months, the overall producer price index, PPI, was up 4.9%, while the core figure was up 1.9%. So you can see those energy and food costs driving the PPI. Now, just to get background info, the PPI comes from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, comes out once a month with revisions, and it's just a measure of the average change over time in the selling prices of a fixed basket of goods by stage of production, industry, and commodity. It's considered, of course, a leading economic indicator for consumer inflation because the production happens way before the consumers even get it and they see the higher prices. The core PPI excludes food and energy prices. This accounts for roughly one quarter of the broad PPI, and they tend to fluctuate wildly depending on inflationary pressures, and it provides a truer reflection of inflationary trends by just looking at the core PPI. So the core that only was up 1.9% for the last 12 months, that's a truer measure at the PPI rather than looking at the full broad range. Inflation at the consumer level took a breather in June as the consumer CPI rose 0.2%, which is its smallest gain in 4 months. The small increase during the month reflected a temporary drop in energy prices. However, the core CPI, which excludes food and energy, rose 0.3% for the fourth consecutive month. The largest factor in the increase was significant growth in the cost of housing, which carries a weighting factor of more than 30% in the index. Year over year, the CPI figure was up 4.3%, while the core was up 2.6%. And this is the largest increase since December of 2001. Once again, the CPI comes out from the same bureau in the government once a month, and it's a widely followed indicator of inflation because the CPI is a measure of the average change over time in the prices paid by urban consumers for a fixed market basket of consumer goods and services. The statisticians at the Bureau of Labor Statistics have come up with a representative bundle of goods that they put in their market basket, and they say, we're going to track the prices of these, and we're going to see how they change over time for consumers. They're going up, then we're having inflation, and the consumer price index is also increasing. The core CPI excludes food and energy prices. This accounts for roughly a quarter of the broad CPI and tends to fluctuate wildly, providing the truer reflection of inflationary trends. So just looking at the core CPI is a little better than looking at the broad for true measures in inflation. Following May's small advance, industrial production surged 0.8% in June. This surpassed analysts' expectations of a 0.5% increase. Woohoo! The growth was wide-ranging. While it was strongest in manufacturing, mining and utilities output also showed solid improvements. Overall, production was up 4.5% from the year-ago level. Capacity utilization, which measures the extent to which production capacity is actually being used, was rising significantly, and it's up to 82.4%. This is 1.4% above its 1972 through 2005 average and marked the highest rate since June of 2000. Yeah. Once again, in review of what this report is, industrial production comes out from the Federal Reserve Board once a month, and it's a measure of the changes in quantity of physical materials and items produced in the manufacturing, mining, a whole bunch of sectors, and utilities industries. The capacity utilization rate reflects the percentage of available resources the producers use to generate output. When productivity is high, capacity utilization is high. Industrial production and capacity utilization are significant indicators and trends in industrial sectors. So this is good news. It's up. The Conference Board's Index of Leading Economic Indicators, which saw a 0.6 decline in May, you'll recall, this regained a fraction of the loss in June, rising a small 0.1%. Six of the 10 index components were positive, with decrease in initial jobless claims, the strongest component of the game. Falling stock prices and a decrease in building permits held back a larger gain. According to the research group, economic growth should continue, but at a slow to moderate rate in the near term. In the past 6 months, the index slipped down 0.3%. The leading economic indicators, as a report, comes from the Conference Board. Once a month, it's a composite index of 10. That's right, 10 economic indicators that typically lead overall economic activity. Index includes things such as housing permits, new orders for consumer goods, consumer expectations, also performance of the S&P 500 index. Now, some of the somber news. Home builders continued to rein in the pace of housing starts during June. We're seeing this housing market slowing. As housing starts fell 5.3% to an annualized 1.85 million, the decline was the fourth in the past 5 months and marked a sharp reversal of May's surprisingly strong increase. Starts were down in each region, except for the Midwest. Versus their year-ago level, housing starts nationwide were off 11%. The number of permits used for new construction, this is a leading indicator of future construction activity, decreased 4.3%. Looking ahead to next week, we're going to have a variety of economic news coming out on Tuesday. Reports on existing home sales, as well as consumer confidence. And other reports on TAP include the Federal Reserve Board's Beige Book on Wednesday, durable goods orders and new home sales on Thursday, and gross domestic product and employment costs coming out Friday. Go to the blog econtechblog.com or jawspeak.com. Same thing. It's going to get you to the same spot. You can take a look at this post and see the source I got the information from, which is Vanguard, and also give you a link to the Vanguard Economic Week in Review if you want to read a text version and see a really cool chart that summarizes the major economic reports for last week. This way you can visually see what's really going on for all the 8 reports that came out last week, what was the actual value, expected value, and also how things increase and decrease. Send me comments, send me feedback. If you want to have other information on this economic podcast, let me know. Criticism, it's always welcome. Talk@econtechblog.com. Send it my way. Look forward to hearing from you, and have a good rest of the weekend.